Accession number 11106, Mr. T. Wilson, reel 16.
Mr. T. Wilson, reel 16. You were issued your food on the morning, Mr. Wilson. How did you cook it during the course of the day?
Well, if your food will be, say, right, 10 years together, so that's one loaf or whatever amount of bread with that black brown bread, wasn't it? That would be, worked out that way. Now, for cooking, now, so much, whatever stove in. That's when you had to go and get the fuel, and organize party to go and collect fuel for it. And everybody had every little mess tin or empty tin or every little tin with got water in it. Eat it that way. Or, if there wasn't, there was a method with a little machine that any prisoner wanted, or a blower. That was what we termed as a blower. Just like a flat piece of wood and a round basin on, and a type of a little bit of a fan that would blow air into a small area, even if it was only, we'll say, about 6 inches, and that 2 cups of water in for you, or even just got warm, and all types of fuel was picked up on it. But it was effective for getting things cooked out in the open. Sometimes you had to do it in the open, because you didn't get very many hot meals up then. You got a turnip soup regular, what was only water, and the tops. Because I've said to my Mrs. Maid, when he's made peeling potatoes and things like that, I said I would live the week on that, you know, which you would have done. Little thing like that one. But that's what they just fed us on really.
So how many meals a day were you able to get out of your ration?
Well, you'd have something on the morning for the break of the day.
And what might that be?
Well, something what you got in your Red Cross parcel and a bit of bread. Because you were issued with a bit of black bread. But we'll say the equivalent with about 2 slices for the whole day. Or maybe 1 thick slice for the whole day.
And this would come after a valley. What time were you made to get up?
Well, there was a definite roll call. It really be about 9 o'clock, some 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. But a definite check every morning that you had to be answered for. Some of the guards could speak a bit English. Well, they would give them ranks. Some of them, if they spoke English, the Austrians and things like that, they'd be interested in the war comes, because they wanted to look like fighting men.
What? So you had your breakfast.
Uh-huh. Well, you turned it into breakfast, the first thing you could get out on, really.
So when would you plan to have your next meal?
Well, that's it, dinner time would come up, what we term as dinner time, 12 o'clock, and I got, there'll be an issue with soup from the kitchens. Your own fellows were making it. But we just like hot water and a bit turnip floating on top. There's nothing serious in it.
Oh, so you had your own kitchens with cooks in them, uh-huh. In the camp?
They are.
And that would be 12 o'clock. Uh-huh. After that meal, did you have sufficient for another meal?
No, if you had anything in your Red Cross parcel and all like that you had, if you hadn't, you'd just do them without.
You said discipline was such, and you were obviously very hungry, yet it held and there was no pinching at all.
Very little. Very little thieving. Oh, that's, well, if I'd tell you what, if there was any thieving, the punishment would be for him to be taken down where the land was, and showed and make them walk right along the latrines. And I said them latrines were about 25 yards long.
Can you describe them? the way they were made?
Well, just like a channel, we were a wood bench on the one side and a wood bench on the other side. And it run about 25 yards, and that is the German wagon used to come in and pump the refuse out. But as regards when you're saying thieving, now, if a fellow was did thieving, hear me, he was marched into that channel and he had to walk the whole length of that channel and they come out lovely. And north of, actually saying traveled in that state. Oh, yes.
And that was your own discipline?
Oh, yes. Yes, that was the own. Well, you couldn't say, right, knock his duck off a thing like that, or, you know, or take something off him or privileges. There's only one thing to do. Put him in the, and then walk along the street. And he showed me, because chaps were starting there with like a pole that then showed that he did do it. Walk from one end to the other. And if he's getting up and slipping down, they're just shoving him down again with a stick from the gut to the other end. Didn't like just walk through. Oh, no.
How did you keep yourselves clean?
Well, there's a type of washhouse where there was water, cold showers and things like that. Well, when you got washed, if you had a shirt, you'd more or less wash it out yourself and then you dry it. But soap, our soap was all right, but the German type of soap, good Lord, you couldn't get a lather with it. Like a grey sort of stuff, it was horrible. So you had to spin your soap out, really. But yes, water was available quite often. Well, it was a past the time.
Were these baths and showers provided by the Germans, or had you constructed them yourself?
No, they were constructed by the Germans. They were part of the camp. Sometimes it'd be hot water, maybe to start the morning with, but the rest of the day, you had sufficient, you had a supply of hot water, the rest cold. But still, it refreshed you for to go there, for to keep yourself clean. Oh, yes, but yes, we went to pass the time away many times. Just get wet and get dried again, and just pass the time away.
You mentioned the fact that not all of the huts had a heating facility. How did you keep yourselves warm, particularly when the really cold?
Well, you slept with what clothes you had on, and as I say, you were given a battle dress and a great coat. You had the wooden board to lie on, a bit sore, but eventually those wooden boards, instead of having about eight lots of wood, two would disappear for fuel when it got scarce, but they just had the barely sufficient. Or you had to watch somebody took one of your lots away, because you're stopping all day anyway. But the finest thing I found out was if you're in the book, you're well off. Didn't know what type of book it was, because you could always exchange somebody for that. But once you got possession of a book, because you didn't read all day, and when you were sitting reading, well, you said before, young me. And you imagine a meal, what it would be like, what would there, and you're faithful. Still dreaming, though, mind. Oh, yes, still dreaming. Yes, you'd lie awake, you read that book. When I say read the book, I didn't know what type of book, and you read every word thoroughly, because you had the time to do it.
Where were the books coming from?
Well, there was a library or something. There were people, you know, organizations being sent them and given them, but they didn't go to get around to everybody. They got around to a certain show, they're probably limited, they got, but that is, if you're looking up to get hold of a book, that was a good possession for that, because you could exchange, it doesn't matter if the think one or not, as long as a book was a book. There wasn't a different value, it was a book.
Were you getting parcels from home?
Yes, parcels were sent, but I thought I was one of the very unlucky ones. I don't know why. I think I only got about two of them all the time I was there. And yet, the worst, they were sent from home regular, because on distribution and things like that, and sending stuff, there's bound to be some missing. If not 100% gets right, I didn't. I got two good ones, and a couple of shirts and a towel and things like that from home.
Did you share any of the items that you may have had in your parcels, or did you tend to keep them to yourself?
You kept what clothing you got yourself, or if you had if you were getting them regular, there was also that system of barter for different things and like that.
How did that work?
Well, some chaps, there must have been shopkeepers in the time, some chaps get a group together and they'd form a bit of a shop. So if a fellow wanted to get some cigarettes, he'd say, well, 3 tins of cigarettes for a small tin of beans, or 5, you know, that their values reckoned out. Or you could go and buy one. Oh, there were shopkeepers. Yes, but they must have been getting quite a lot from home. They must have been getting parcels regularly and organize themselves for their own such a thing. As I said, I've got very few. So therefore, I just said, sold your own in regard getting what I could. Oh, you could buy different things with cigarettes. Cigarettes were the currency. Or the bar chocolate. There was exchange. Everything was at its value. But cigarettes was the most.
Did you get any camp money of any invention?
No. No monies whatsoever from the camp. As a matter of fact, what money that country where you got caught at, and think they got yard money on you, that you took off you, but you never saw it again. No, there's no money whatsoever. The money was the bits of goods you had, or cigarettes was the currency. And it worked out very well with some fellas, because if they were receiving parcels quite regularly, see, they had the monopoly of it. Well, they could afford to dictate terms at times.
What happened if there was a disciplinary procedure which involved the Germans? What kind of punishment did they devise for you?
Oh, dear, no. Well, I've never been in that situation. The only situation we're in, when there was a rumour went round punishment, was putting handcuffs. It was because they said the captain is being mistreated in England, and that we were handcuffed, and the German was giving his shout off lecture, which nobody would ever believe that he would, but all he could shout all day. But you were given handcuffs, but then you come to a system where if you got a nail, somebody found out how to work it. To leave. They were done also, well, it didn't matter what they'd done, some lad in the camp would find an answer and it would spread like wildfire.
You say you were handcuffed?
Oh, yes.
Exactly how? Were you both hands?
In forward.
In front of you?
Oh, yes. The one behind, the one in front of you.
And were those on all day?
Yes.
And for how long a period?
The one all the time, they decided to take them off.
And was that a considerable
yes.
amount of time?
Well, I mean, if we wanted to go to the train and things like that, it was horrible. But you were still handcuffed. Yes, I can remember it was a horrible time.
And this, you say, was because they claimed that German prisoners were being maltreated in England.
Well, what we made out from the chap, when he goes all down in a certain area, he's spouting away, because that the machine guns and all that really wrong, they thought it was going to be a riot and that. That prisoners were being treated, and that was the reason why we were getting this sort of treatment. I don't think it was, but
what was your response? You know, the camp response to that.
and we thought it was disgraceful. But they were in charge and you couldn't do no with it. That's it. We were lucky compared to them political prisoners. I only seen a couple of camps of them, but as we're passing through from one place to another now.
This handcuffing, did this occur in this first camp that you were in?
Yes, in the NCO's Starlack 357. It occurred in that one.
Did the Red Cross not only see to your welfare, but did they come to inspect the camp to see how the Germans were treating you?
You were told the Red Cross representative would be round at a certain time. And I've spoken to him, he says, that's a good about this one, or he was the means of me getting clothing. But in certain areas, they did observe the regulations. Well, being NCOs and not the higher camps, well, the same as officers' camps, they would have been more or less easy, more treated than what we were. But if it wasn't for the Red Cross really getting a bit food here, then there was occasional farmers out here. I mean, we sent thousands of parcels and cigarettes out. There must have been no keeping there.
You felt that not all of them were getting through?
The Germans got the majority of them. The certain camps got them. But they had nothing themselves, so there you are. I would have done the same myself. If I'd been working on real world and stuff with them, my wife and them with some even I was in England. I mean, that's on human nature, isn't it? You can't beat human nature when it comes to when people are short. And that's what brings that animal out of you when you're short.
Say that you refused to work, so literally you had to fill in your whole day. Do you feel that on reflection that it might have been better for you if you had been able to go out to work, if just to keep an interest and keep the days flying over?
No, it was seldom really, because you said right, you're captured in Germany, and if you're working for him, you only help them. No. That stuck in your really, really and truly is an Englishman. I mean, the other chaps are all well and good. Some are weak willed than they got. But some of the private had no opportunity, really. None at all.
Did you experience any men whose morale and behaviour declined to an extent that it affected them badly? Men under pressure, men away from home, men locked up. What kind of effect was it having on some of them, the weaker ones?
Well, the real trouble is that when you're in that city, it's every man for himself to take care of himself, really. And if you say, oh, well, so-and-so, he's a weird thing. He's on his own. You had no sympathy, man, because your main job was fighting for yourself, for to keep your own spirit up. And the friends you bundle, you mix them with more or less your own regiment, if possible. And all the different groups, all the rough lads, they would mix among themselves. And that's it, the engineers and things like that, and artillery blokes, they would mix among themselves. But it was fully mixed camp. It wasn't like just one unit. No.
Now, you said you had a small group of friends who you remembered. Who were they?
Well, there was a chap called Charlie Rowe, Malton, Yorkshire. There'd be Tommy Oliver. He belonged with Hartlepool. Burgess, I think, he as well. But the two of these fellas we kept with all the time, all this. Even the more we went, our numbers might be extended, or our numbers, but the four or five of us, we were together all the time, more or less. Until we were on the 1st March.
Were these the 1st Battalion men, like yourself?
Yes, the 1933 fellas. Fellas joined up in about 1933.
You were taken prisoner in 1943, and already the Germans would begin to suffer defeat. Not. Was it part of the morale that you knew that you were going to win the war at some stage and you would be freed.
Oh, the idea never left their mind that we had the better of them.
Did the Germans, do you feel, realise this as well?
They start realising it, yes, because you could tell by the types of guards they're getting the lenient. They wanted the dictating to you as much and bullying, shouting, get a line and things like that. You take your time and get in. Because I can remember, I think the invasion started, I think it would be June the 6th. And when the chap came around for the get you out there, out your hut, you know, for the roll call, he says, an entirely different, as I say, he's an Austrian fella, spoke with English, and we called him Charlie or something like that. And the Scotch lad next to me, he says, "There's war clothes, Charlie." And it leaked out. That's how we got to know it leaked out. Well, from then, I mean, our spirits really boosted up in there as well. But we still never give up hope at all. Oh, no, we never say, right, we are defeated. Mine were broken hearted to be taken prisoner at the expense of the tactmen and things like that, and the military with manoeuvring and around, which is one thing we'll never forget. Because only 500 of us wanted to go on a little island, and we're getting a fighting chance, would it be, or killed. But to be sacrificed, that sticks in my memory yet. And it always will.
Were you getting war information through to the camp? Were you getting some idea of how the war was going during the course of the time you were there?
Yes. Some clever fellas devised a way, and they bartered for some of the Polish people. Polish people could be trusted, because they were under pressure with them at times.
Were these civilians or...
Civilians.
And where were these coming from to make contact with you?
Well, they didn't contact us at all, the ordinary fellas on the camp. They always had the elite fellas who could get in that position. And say, well, such as I said, the chap come in to empty the train and things like that. And where we get them, there'll be so many cigarettes or soap, if you can get this. And it moved around like that. And they did assemble a wireless.
And so he had a wireless in the camp?
Yes, they assembled the chaps, what was there? Well, those chaps knew every bit and things like that. They knew what they wanted, and they could even put one together. And they had the time for to do it.
Did the Germans know where it was?
No.
Or did they ever know it was there?
No, never. It was only, as a matter of fact, we didn't know it was there.
I was going to say, did you know?
No. When we were in the camp, we even subscribed so many cigarettes towards the outcome of it.
As part of the bribe to get the materials?
Oh, yes. Say, well, we want so many of each man. If each man contributes at least that, if he's got more, well and good. But we contributed to buying one in Poland, and that's, we've been getting used to.
You'd gone through a very hard winter.
Oh, yes, it was.
And how difficult did that become? Because obviously you had the fuel problem. How difficult did it become?
It was killing, I can tell you that. But I know, well, we were strong enough to stand up, we had to stand up or die. But it was, well, Poland, the last summer, May, June, July, before there's still snow on the ground in Poland. I know there was that time of year, and we were up there.
Have you any other memories of the camp, Mr. Wilson?
Not many, no, because we kept ourselves entertained by different devices, what we had, or reading a book, or we kept ourselves from starving by dreaming, things like, you know, little things, what was, you'd never think on what happened in the normal sphere, but they were required for to keep you alive. Or even to do an exercise and things like that. Not you've done many, like, but you kept yourself right.
You came to move. How did that come about?
Well, the movement would be because being an NCO's camp and NCO's north of Wales, always very treasured, more or less. I mean, you're the highest standard then. And, I mean, if you were going to get about 500 or 600 sergeants back in your hands, so the Germans were going to have out the road for you. Because in the forces, you train for the dual course of things, and the value of the course, well, the chaps had done umpteen types of courses, and they were valued for any admission of the army, see? So he was moving us out away from the forces that was advancing, and it was termed as a forced march. It wasn't much of them like marching, really, but just like dragging along, and if you got there, or you come to the farmhouse, and they would say, right, this column stop here, the next column go to the other one.
What time of the year was this? Do you recall the date?
Well, I think it would be June, July, I think. I know the snow cleared away, so it must have been...
Would it be after your second winter? Because you were there in the winter of 43-4, oh, and then there was the winter of 44-5.
It would be after the second winter, and it would be somewhere in June, July, or not quite up to August. I don't know. Just about the summer it was really starting, because we just camped down in Balm, so it would be on the summer weather. And I can remember one instant cleaning on March. We camped in, and there was cattle in that. So I just thought, well, I'll get the booklet. No one knows what the other. And I stole a bucket of pig meal, I think. I didn't want the bucket, I only wanted to see what was inside for to keep it going. Any little thing like that would keep you going. And the German sent the air walloped. Shouting, he'd go to put the butt stroke onto me. And, being a sergeant and instructor. And he'd probably not be up to the standard of his normal German soldier, because he'd only been called up for the as a guard, see? He was easy.
What did he do? Did he come at you with his
yeah, he's going with the butt of his rifle. You know, instead of when he pointed me and you just swing it down and you get it with a stock.
And what did you do?
I just grabbed hold of both ends and twisted them down and pushed them on the ground, got them on the ground. But I didn't want the engine at all, I wanted to be up, but it wasn't going to hit me or shoot me or it. Not to disarm him, which I could do. And as I say, he wouldn't be a fully trained German as you would expect a German to be. I'm not saying book and beat him any time or anything like that. No, he'd been a first class fellow trained, the same as our trained. Well, it would have been a different outcome. But the type of fellow what was even wearing uniform then, he'd maybe forced for the door he's doing.
Back to that, what happened to you after you'd thrown him down?
Well, I went from one group to another, even groups of 10 to 5, something like that. You've never seen this, you've never seen this, you've never seen this. You've moved round and moved round.
So you in effect did off into the crowd?
Oh yes, I had to. I was said, me mates, I said, mind you, haven't seen. I'm up there, because they'll check there, one there, and I was different. I moved around quickly until everything was all right. Now, on the march, well, I can remember the same period as it was a sack of potatoes. It wasn't a full sack, but some. But I tried to get some, and I got some on my back. Somebody slipped the bag, and they were dropping out. And, you know, you couldn't get all now for the survival.